You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today I'm going to start out with two updates of stories that I did either earlier in the week or in the following week. One concerns the Department of Justice is going to go forward and request a stay from probably the Fifth Circuit, U.S. Federal Circuit, to stop the judge's order, the district, federal district judge Andrew Hanen's order that really did stop dead in its tracks the Obama administration's attempt to go forward with an illegal and unconstitutional program to grant illegal aliens, 4 to 5 million of them that are already in the United States, work permits. To be clear about this, the judge did not rule on the merits. The district court did not rule on the merits. He had a very long decision and made it very clear, though, that the 26 states that are suing the federal government have standing and have strong arguments, and because of that and the fact that these states were arguing that this would be very expensive to all 26 states should the Obama administration go forward and grant those work permits, he in his decision gave a temporary injunction, in other words, which would stop the federal government from issuing these cards. And the first step really is to take applications, but once the applications were approved, then the government would issue what's called a work permit. Technically, it's an employment authorization document. And once you have that, that's legal status to work in the United States. The problem is, and the reason why what this administration is doing is quite illegal, that is rewriting the law. The law does not give him the authority, the president, and through his attorney general, the authority to do that. So the Obama administration, if not later today, Friday, sometime Monday, will file a brief requesting a stay, in other words, stopping this temporary injunction. I don't think they're going to get it. I'll be surprised if they do. And because of that, if they do not get the stay, then for all practical purposes, the Obama administration's effort to legalize millions of illegal aliens in this country should come to a stop, assuming they honor the court's order. Now, I think they will, but you never know with this administration, because this is the same president that on more than 22 occasions said he didn't have the authority to do exactly what he went ahead and did. So we'll wait and see to Monday, but I wanted to give you that update. I was a little surprised that they delayed this long. I think they really sat down and reviewed in detail the decision and knew they had a big problem, and decided the best way to approach this is just to seek a stay of the order. So I'll give you more news Monday. I'm not going to go into the background here that I've done in a past show when the decision actually came out. But this is going to be very interesting, because if the stay is not granted, then what happens is the administration can't issue those cards, can't provide legal status, and then the court, first the district court would need to hear the case and issue a decision. And depending on what the decision is, most likely the Department of Justice would appeal that decision to the Fifth Circuit. And I don't think they're going to win on appeal. And this case can go to the Supreme Court, I don't think they will hear it, because this is specifically a type of issue that they don't like to hear, because it's really up to the Congress to assert its authority under the Constitution. Namely, they have the authority to pass laws. Now, the one thing that I'll point out is, depending how the courts rule, Congress, namely the Senate in particular, might defer action. I think that would be a terrible idea, and the base will not support it because, and this is important, you want to make clear to the president that he does not have the funding to go ahead with this. He's on shaky legal ground to begin with. And shaky constitutional ground. But by cutting off the money, and that's the bill, and let me make clear where that stands, the House passed a bill that does not provide fund. It provides funding for the Department of Homeland Security, but it does not fund what the president is trying to do at all. And it withholds funds from that department, so it can't do it. Now, it's up to the Senate to pass their own bill, and where there's differences, have a conference committee, and then iron out the differences. The problem is the Democratic Party are blocking even the start of that process. They think they've won the last election. I have news for them. They didn't win the last election, and the base, the Republican base, is looking for leadership out of Mitch McConnell to get this bill passed. But they might take what's happening in the courts as the way to detour around this, take the off-ramp, as one commentator expressed. I'm not for them to take the off-ramp, in other words, not pass a bill. I think it's in everyone's interest, including the Republicans that were elected to the Senate as well as the House, to stop the president by making sure that the funds that he would need to carry out his illegal activity are completely cut off. And you better believe the voter base are looking at that right now. They're expecting some leadership out of the Republicans that were elected in the Senate, and to do whatever it takes to make sure that the funding for the Department of Homeland Security, in particular this office that issues this cards, is stopped. Don't fall for this nonsense that the Republicans are trying to shut down the government or the Department of Homeland Security. They're trying to do just the opposite, and that's what they've done. They've passed funding through the end of this fiscal year. The only thing that they have not passed is funding for this office. So the people to blame are the Democratic Party and President Obama for starting what is clearly a constitutional crisis. Now, if the President of the United States continues in this vein, in other words, exceeding his authority as president, I think it's past time for the House and the Senate to impeach him. The House would impeach him and the Senate would hear it. This president has become arrogant and thinks he's a tyrant. And when you have someone that's thinking and behaving that way, it's up to the Congress under the Constitution to not only cut off his money, but also to impeach him. Now, the Republicans have said that's off the table. The chairman, the House, I believe it's the House, yes, it is the House Judiciary Committee chairman, has said we're not going to do it. Well, there's a problem with that. You only have two remedies. Either you cut off the money or you impeach him. And this is just one instance. Most Republicans are aware of at least half a dozen instances where the president has simply exceeded his authority to really implement policy. Well, enough said. I'm not going to settle this here. We'll wait to see what the court will do and what the Department of Justice is arguing for the stay. I think it's really a 50-50 proposition, because this would damage the states if the president went ahead and issued these cards. I don't think he's going to get a stay. I think what's going to happen is the temporary injunction will hold, and then the district judge will hear the case. Both sides will present their case, and then he will issue a decision. And depending on what that decision is, one of the parties will appeal, first to the Fifth Circuit and then to the Supreme Court. And I think it will go to the Supreme Court. Now, will they want to hear the case? I don't think so, because this is one of a small class of cases where they simply do not want to decide whether Congress or the president, who is in the right. This is a political, very much a political process, an act of the president, and there is already a remedy for Congress to stop it, namely to cut off funds or to impeach him. The ball is still in Congress's court in the Senate. And yes, the clock is ticking, but the rule of law has to be supported. And the voters that voted the Republicans a larger majority in the House and gave them control back to the Senate are expecting results, and the time for excuses is over. It's over, folks. So enough said about the update on that story. The second one is an update, again, on a story that I highlighted. This Monday, we were supposed to see a ceasefire in the Ukraine between the Ukrainian government forces that are battling rebel forces backed by the Russians in eastern Ukraine. What the Russian government is clearly trying to do is keep a large part of the Ukraine, especially the eastern portion, as part of Russia. They've already taken over or annexed the Crimea, where they have a large Navy base, and they're trying to have land access by ultimately getting a large portion of the land in eastern Ukraine to connect with the Crimea. So the ceasefire is not holding at all. Now, what the United States government is trying to do is to get to make the Ukraine part of the European Union. That's what they're encouraging by funding various groups and people in the Ukraine. And ultimately, I think they would like the Ukraine to be part of NATO and to base U.S. forces, military forces, air forces, missiles in the Ukraine. Russia doesn't want that. They clearly see that as a direct threat, and it is. And I think that's partly responsible for their actions in the Ukraine. And you need to understand, for several hundred years, the Ukraine was part of Russia and then the Soviet Union. And about a third to a half of the country is, they primarily speak Russian. The rest of the country in the western portion, the center of the country towards and then towards the western portion of the Ukraine, why it's mixed, or predominantly speak Ukrainian. So we still have the Ukrainian government fighting so-called Russian-supported rebels. I think it's fair to say most of them are Russians that have been brought in to secure the roads and transportation links to the military base that the Russians have taken over in the Crimea for their Black Sea fleet. Now, I need to point out, for those that are new to the show, the way you listen to the Prompt Pop show is go to promptpops.wordpress.com. That's promptpops, prompkpops.wordpress.com. And you'll see at the very top, under my photograph, links to the last 60 to 80 shows. This show will probably be posted sometime tomorrow afternoon for your listening pleasure. And for all my shows, you can go to the bottom of the page where I have all the links to all the shows except to the first six or seven that unfortunately were overwritten. Now, I'm pointing this out because I also have significant amount of information, usually articles, cartoons, photographs, YouTube videos, pertaining to the stories that I'm commenting upon. And I do have a number of videos, both in the, for those that didn't catch the earlier show, on the first story, I have a number of videos that summarize what the district judge did. At the time I started this show, there were no videos pertaining to what the Department of Justice was going to be doing. However, I fully expect by tomorrow or Monday at the very latest there will be. And obviously for the situation in the Ukraine, we do have a few videos. The essence of it is the fighting continues. In other words, the ceasefire that was supposed to go into effect, where both sides would pull back and there would be a buffer zone, have not really, at least up to now, the ceasefire is not held. You have a lot of gunfire, and the Russians are trying to consolidate their positions so they can secure a land route in the Ukraine to their port in the Crimea. Now, the question is, what should the United States do? What should NATO do? But before answering that question, what's at stake here? What's important? I think none of the parties want war. I think that's clear, because war would mean a nuclear exchange. So they want to contain the military actions, and they don't want it to escalate, even though Russia is pushing. And if they don't watch out, they're going to get a push back. You see, the United States government has already imposed sanctions on various leaders in Russia, and they definitely hurt. But you also have something else going on that's hurting the Russian economy. And that's what the Saudis are doing. And let me back up one second. Russia relies on the export of oil as well as natural gas to Western Europe as well as to China and other countries. And the reason why we're seeing this flare-up in the Ukraine is the pipelines go through the Ukraine. They were built years ago, and about 70% of that output goes to Western Europe, including Germany, France, Poland, and other countries. So it's rather critical. That pipeline is rather critical that it not be interrupted, because these countries rely on Russia for natural gas to heat people's homes, as well as plants, as well as for oil. And the Russians are trying to build alternative pipelines that would bypass the Ukraine situation. But that's going to take time. That's in the future. So neither Germany or the other Western countries, Germany, France, but Western Europe in general, want an interruption. They don't want NATO to go rushing in and taking the side of the Ukrainian government. And Russia knows this. But what's hurt Russia is the fact that in the Middle East, as a result of falling demand from Western Europe, as well as China and other countries, for oil, due to a slowdown in their economies, normally what the Saudis will do in that situation, where there's a dramatic decline in demand, is decrease the supply that's being produced so that oil prices are maintained at a high level. They haven't done it in this case, and the prime beneficiaries of that has been the United States consumers, not the oil industry, but consumers. That is largely, not entirely, responsible for the decline in gasoline prices in the United States. Now, I know they've spiked up, but I believe they're heading back down again. We'll see. However, as a result of the declining price of a barrel of petroleum, this negatively and dramatically affects the earnings of Russia when it sells oil to all its customers. Remember, oil is a world market with many producers, many consumers. And the Russian economy is very much dependent on the export of energy, primarily oil, and to a lesser extent, natural gas. They also need foreign capital to invest in their country in the oil or energy sector. And that largely comes from the United States. So they need investment and know-how to develop their oil resources. It's not that they don't have expertise, they most certainly do, but they have very much a old infrastructure, and they have to find as well as develop and produce more oil and natural gas to earn the exchange, and that is going to require investments largely from the United States and Western Europe. So it's not in Russia's long-term interest to increase tensions in the Ukraine. I think what they want, they more or less are getting. They want the base in the Crimea to support their Black Sea fleet. They wanted a land route to it. And ultimately, what I see happening is the partitioning or splitting up of the Ukraine, where those provinces or areas that are predominantly Russian-speaking will go to Russia. Those that are primarily Ukrainian will definitely go to the Ukraine, and the ones in the middle they'll argue about, but I think will stay with the Ukraine. And at some future point, Ukraine will be admitted into the European Union, assuming that's what they want. The European Union is having some problems, Greece being the primary problem. So we'll wait and see on whether the ceasefire over time gets better or not. I'm not optimistic. But we need some adult supervision here. I thought we had, or the Western Europe, when they negotiated this ceasefire, didn't have a final deal, but at least had a method to go forward, because you're definitely going to need a ceasefire. The problem, ladies and gentlemen, is the Ukrainian government is a basket case in terms of the economy and really doesn't have the arms. So it's very much dependent upon Western Europe and the United States for economic support as well as military support. And up to now, President Obama has not been willing to provide so-called lethal weapons to the Ukrainian government. They need ammunition. They need tanks, artillery. They need aircraft. They need training. They need a lot of money. because the economy, like I said, is in debt. They couldn't pay their bills to Russia to pay for the natural gas that they were getting. And what does that mean to the U.S. taxpayer? It means more foreign aid to that country, as well as from Western Europe. Frankly, I think it's Western Europe's responsibility to, I'll use the B word, bail out the Ukraine. Because that's what we're talking about. So the sooner this crisis can be resolved, I think everyone will benefit. Russia, the Western Europe, as well as the United States. However, from the Russian point of view, it's getting squeezed. That's how they look at it. They don't want NATO forces in the Ukraine. They don't want missiles in the Ukraine. They don't want United States forces in the Ukraine. And you can understand why. Because for many, many hundreds of years, Ukraine was part of Russia. And they're taking some of it back. Not all of it, but some of it. And there's a long history there that I'm not going to get into. Because there's more than enough information on YouTube if you're interested in it. The danger is the fact that this could lead to a regional conflict and maybe even a world war. In other words, this is very much a dangerous situation for all parties. And we're going to need more leadership. We need results. But it takes two to negotiate, and Putin has to be willing to do it. I thought when it was more or less clear that he's going to get what he wants, he'd cut a deal. And maybe he will. But first, we need a ceasefire that's holding in place, and neither the Russian-supported rebels nor the Ukrainian military forces are shooting at each other. There have been several thousand people killed, and people are fleeing where they're living for the simple reason both sides are shooting and shelling at each other. We're talking artillery, rockets, missiles, as well as gunfire, rifle fire. So you've had, on both sides, soldiers dying and being wounded, as well as civilians. Now, some of you will say you shouldn't reward the Russians for invading another country. In principle, I agree with you, but I suggest you look at a map. And where do you think the Russian troops and forces are? They're right along the Russian border, is right next to Ukraine, and they're right on the other side. They're massed. Now, will they cross over? I will argue they already have. They haven't identified themselves as Russian forces, but largely the equipment that the so-called rebels are getting is from Russia. And I think training as well as the leadership is from Russia. This is a Russian military action invasion of another country. That's clear. That is very much clear. And I think it's Western Europe's responsibility to take the lead here. And they try to. At some point, though, President Obama needs to get involved. He needs to show leadership. And we have some strong cards. Because the sanctions that we've imposed cut off funds and assets of many of the leading Russians that are supporting Putin. And I don't think it was an accident that the Saudis decided not to cut production. And that's normally what they do when the prices are falling. It's not clear to me, though, whether the Saudis will support what they've done for several years, whether or not this is a temporary action or a more or less permanent action. I say that because what they've done has hurt Russia, Iran, the Islamic State, Syria, in other words, the enemies of Saudi Arabia. Now, some commentators in the United States have made the point that why U.S. consumers have clearly benefited through lower gasoline prices, and I do think they're going back down, what it's really hurt is our own expansion of our reserves, both natural gas and oil, in the various shale formations in the United States, both in Texas and in North, South Dakota, Wyoming area in general. We have shale oil all over the United States that can be drilled. And the reason why we've had a revolution, you've had two technologies, one being fracking, where you send largely water, they have some chemicals in it, but largely water under pressure to break up the shale rock formations so that the oil or natural gas can flow. When you combine that technology, and that's been around for a good 60 years. Now, there have been improvements over time as people got smart and used it. But the dramatic innovation was directional drilling, where you can drill an oil well down to the depth that you want to, where you believe the reservoir, the oil or natural reservoir are, and then drill multiple, go out horizontally, or what's called directional drilling, go in several directions. So you can have one well, but when you get down to where the oil and gas is, you can drill, think of it as 360 degrees, any direction you want. And because of this, the United States oil production has gone up dramatically. So has natural gas. So have our reserves. Now, a number of people have pointed out, and this is correct, to use this technology, it is definitely more expensive. Ideally, you would not have to use fracturing, and it may or may not make sense to use horizontal directional drilling. But the real unknown is these wells don't go on forever. They usually have a good production initially, but it starts to taper off, and they don't keep on producing at a high rate. So even though we've obviously, the industry, and it's largely independents that have done this, not the major oil companies, why this has clearly resulted in more oil production and in turn meant cheaper gasoline prices. What the industry needs, for example, is the pipeline to get the oil to the refineries in Texas and then to export that product, gasoline, whatever, primarily gasoline. So it needs a pipeline. It doesn't make sense to use trains, especially when the trains, the rolling stock, are decades old. It's dangerous. And we've had recently a train accident involving this. Yet President Obama has been blocking the major pipeline that would largely get Canadian production down to those refineries. And it would employ a lot of people. And I think Congress, in the next couple of weeks, months, is going to put that question squarely to Obama with a bill passed by both the House and the Senate. And I don't know what he's going to do. I think the smart political thing would be to sign it. But everything I've heard from this administration, he's not going to do it. They've been delaying it and delaying and delaying this pipeline. And this is the environmental reason, well, this comes from the tar sands of Canada. And this could potentially, if the pipeline ever ruptured, foul the aquifers. What the people are not saying, it's a lot safer, many orders of magnitude safer, to transport this oil, not by trains, which is dangerous, and we've had several accidents, massive accidents, people being killed in towns. It's much safer to do this by pipeline. It's cheaper, more efficient, and it's safer. And it's proven. And for the life of me, I keep saying, if this president truly cared about working people, he would have approved it a long time ago. They've deliberately slowed walk this, putting roadblocks after roadblocks for one reason and one reason only. Because they're getting a lot of campaign contributions from their donor base that doesn't want this pipeline built. And if that is the final decision and it's not built, the Canadians are just going to go west because they have a huge, huge supply of oil. It's a lot more expensive to produce, but given the world demand for energy, it will be produced, whether it goes through the United States and our refineries, or it goes to the West or East Coast. So we'll wait and see what's going to happen. You'll probably see it in the gasoline prices. I was driving in and parking my car today and listening to the news, and this surprised me because I hadn't heard it on the news, but at least at that time, oil was selling less than $50 a barrel. I think it was $49.90, something like that. And if that's the direction that petroleum prices are going, you will see it at the pump in the next coming weeks. Because it got in Dallas, the regular price of a gallon of regular unleaded gasoline got down to about $1.70, $1.75. Now it's back up to about $2.10 to $2.15. I'm interested in that. Anyone with a car is interested in the gasoline prices. But remember, a large portion of those gasoline prices are state taxes. It might seem that Texas prices are low. It's not low. It's just how much we tax gasoline, and we use it for primarily building highways. Now, I want to turn to another story. And this was rather, I need to confess, at the last minute I decided, you know, I really would like to talk about this, but I really haven't had enough time to do my normal preparation. But I want to talk about it, and that is the whole subject of net neutrality. I have, for your information, and to a lesser extent my information, published a number of videos for this story in my show notes. For each story I do, I have what I call my show prep notes. And those are articles, videos, photographs, whatever is appropriate, cartoons. And this is a hot issue, and it's a complicated issue. But I wanted to simplify it. Obama is pushing and supporting so-called net neutrality. And so are literally every leftist organization you can think of. Anyone that is for big government, more taxes, more regulation, limiting of people's speech, they are lobbying for net neutrality. And what that means is the internet, if it were to pass, would be taxed, would be highly regulated, and ultimately your freedom of speech would be threatened. Now, they're not saying that, but that is what ultimately will happen. So I'm emphatically opposed to net neutrality, which means that the internet would be regulated as a public utility, like the telephones. Right now, the internet is an information service. However, your telephones were regulated up until the breakup of AT&T as a common carrier under Part 2. And that's what they're trying to do to the internet, make it regulated as telephones were starting in the 30s. The problem is that stifled innovation. Really, all the changes you've seen in telecommunications happen after a court order in a case breaking up AT&T's government-supported monopoly. Now, many of those baby bells have come back together, but what do we have today? We have a lot of competition in telecommunications. But the problem that the government says they're trying to regulate is that for you to have access to the internet, you have to go to an internet service provider, an ISP, and they charge you a monthly fee. Now, those on the other side said, well, we want everyone to be charged the same rate. Sounds reasonable, but what's the problem? And it is a problem. I enjoy Netflix. I don't have, when I visited my brother in Florida, one of the things I did, because I was sick and recovering from an illness, I watched a lot of movies on Netflix. I like Netflix, and my brother subscribed to it. He paid for it. He paid to have internet service provided, but he also had to pay for a subscription to Netflix. And I watched a number of television series that I normally would not watch because I simply don't have a television. But since I was recovering, and I don't want to make a case out of it, it took me a couple of weeks, I spent the time becoming reacquainted with both certain movies and certain TV series. The point is this. Let me not be distracted here. About 30% of the bandwidth on the internet is what? Is people that are subscribing through their ISP provider but are purchasing Netflix. And a large portion of that bandwidth, or the size of the pipe is another way to say it, is people downloading Netflix. And there are a lot of people, especially young people, that love Netflix. And they're afraid that their monthly subscription is going to go up. And it probably will. But my response is it should. And let me relate it to sewers. Imagine you live in a residential district where they put in sewer lines for the houses in the neighborhood. And now a hotel is going to be built, a large hotel, to service a golf course, but also visitors to the city. What needs to be built? Sewers. In other words, the existing sewers can't provide the sewer services that a large hotel would need. So the city is going to charge that hotel for the construction, or whoever does the sewers. It doesn't have to be a city. And I think that is the way it should be. It's a question of use. And where you have one content provider, such as Netflix, and that's what they are, they provide movies and television shows over the internet, is using a large percentage of that pipeline, it is eminently fair and appropriate for the internet service provider to charge Netflix for that. Ladies and gentlemen, there's no such thing as a free lunch. And you want the internet service providers to expand their networks and improve the speed. They need economic incentives to do that. And if the government gets involved, they're going to regulate it, supposedly to protect you and me from seeing our internet service throttled down. There's a problem. They can't really provide a solid example of that. It's not a question of throttling down. That's not what these various service providers are doing. And remember, there's competition amongst internet service providers. But to the extent that they need to increase the bandwidth of their networks that are servicing a community, they should legitimately charge Netflix, since it is a big user of that bandwidth, a higher price. It's just like if you were using a telephone. Some people use it rarely. I'm in that situation. At one time, I had a landline. And let me tell you what happened over time, because this is what the government's going to end up doing. When I first came to Dallas, my landline cost me about $10 to $12 a month. And then over time, that gradually went up to where I was paying somewhere between $30 and $35 a month. I seldom use that line, rarely. And most of it was for local calls. Now, if I were going to use that line heavily, especially for long distance, what is the telephone company going to do? It's going to charge me more. But the problem was my bill went up largely because of various government entities tacking on taxes. And that's what you're going to see happen on the internet. Whenever the government intervenes, it screws up the business. You end up paying a lot more for the service, and the service provider will be paying a lot in taxes, and that's what these big government interventionists are rubbing their hands. We can't wait to start taxing the internet. They're going for the money first. So don't fall for the nonsense, the propaganda that the left is putting out, saying it's only fair that everyone be charged the same rate. It's not fair. Are you out of your mind? See, most people have limited access to the internet. In other words, they're not hogging it. They're looking at websites. It's basic services. Other people that, for example, are heavy users of Netflix or other video on demand services are hogging that internet by downloading the various movies. And as far as I'm concerned, they should, if they want Netflix, they should pay for it, not only their subscription, but in the fact that you need broadband to support the transmission, the lines connecting Netflix to the various users. So I don't buy the government's argument that, A, we have a problem. I don't think we have a problem, but I'm warning you what they're about. They're about charging you or charging the internet service providers taxes, and more importantly, regulating like a telephone company, and they're not a telephone company. They're never going to kill the internet, but they're going to ruin it just like they did with Obamacare. Think of net neutrality is Obamacare, but for the internet. You can keep your plan if you want it. You can go to the doctor that you want it, and it'll be cheaper. That's what they're trying to pull with this net neutrality. Now, the comment period ended, and we'll be waiting for the FCC to announce its decision. And right now, Congress is investigating, and it's supposedly the FCC is supposedly an independent agency. But Congress is investigating because the White House, under Obama, had been sending and trying to influence the decision of the FCC. Obama and his administration, as well as various leftist organizations, are the big pushers of this for various reasons. And to some extent, they've, because this gets complex fairly quickly, and it's hard to explain to people. That's why I'm keeping it at relatively high level. If you want more information, there's a lot of information on net neutrality. And I don't really think I'm doing justice to the subject, but I wanted to hit it because it needs to be stopped. Keep the government from interfering with the internet, because that the internet is provide people with the freedom to express themselves, as well as get information from all sources. We want the government to stay out of this industry. And wherever the government gets involved, the prices go up, the quality goes down, and the taxes rise and go up, up, and up. You end up with higher prices, a lousier service, and innovation slows down. So you're going to hear more about net neutrality and what the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, is going to decide. I don't know when you're going to hear a decision, but it's up. If it goes the way I think it is, and they'll try to regulate it, it's up to Congress to stop it, and they better stop it. Now, I know the problem is there are Democrats and some Republicans that are looking at this as a great source for more government revenue, more taxes, and that's what they'll be doing gradually. But the greater concern, as far as I am concerned, is the matter of free speech. They want to regulate your freedom of expression on the internet. Where I see this going, you'd have to get a license to start a website. You don't need to do that now. If you want to start a website, you can do it. Find a place to post it. Some are free. For example, I use WordPress a lot. I haven't paid WordPress a single cent. Now, where does WordPress earn its money? It earns its money through advertising. There are people that will advertise on my various blogs, including the blog for this radio show. But I have, I think, 8 or 9 WordPress blogs. I'm on other sites, but that's the main one I use. I'm happy with WordPress. I recommend it highly. Doesn't cost me anything in a sense of I'm paying them. Why? Because the business model that's developed is there are people that will pay money to advertise on various WordPress sites. They place ads. Usually it's a video at the very bottom. And I have no problem with that. And what's terrific is, should I have a change my mind and I don't want the advertising, I can pay WordPress a nominal fee. I believe it's $20 or $25 a year not to have ads. I don't really care. If someone wants to put an ad, fine. So what do I provide? Yes, I get a free website. A blog is a website. I provide all the content. And yes, it takes space on a hard drive to store that. And they are constantly improving the various blogs that you can get. Anyone can start it today. Right now, you could go to WordPress and start a blog. Won't cost you a dime. Now, if I want to put videos on it, videos that I have produced, I can do that. I put YouTube videos. Doesn't cost me anything. In other words, you get what you pay for, and that's the key point. You get what you pay for. And if you provide your customer base with, for example, movies or TV shows or whatever, and you want to make money, you'll charge them for that, and you want them to have a good experience. In other words, the video doesn't stutter, it flows, and you should pay for that benefit in terms of the broadband that you need, think of it, the pipes that you need to transmit video files, and they're very big. I do a lot of video editing. They're huge files. Even when they're compressed with a various codecs, they're still big. And I'm a little surprised it's 30%. That's the number I hear. Netflix alone is 30%. Now, some of you are saying, well, what about YouTube? I use a lot of YouTube. Well, there are ways to compress YouTube so it doesn't take so much pipe or broadband capability. So I wanted to get on the record, at least my views. I'm opposed to what this administration is doing on the internet. And I think most people, if they spend a little time trying to understand it, will also be opposed. And there are companies on both sides of this issue. But I know from sad experience, because my interest is primarily economics and business, wherever the government gets involved, they screw it up, and then they argue, well, the business has screwed it up. We got to intervene some more. They're constantly making a mess of it and then intervening again and making a mess of it and intervening again. If you don't believe me, see what's happening with Obamacare right now and the horror stories. That is a total disaster. And it needed, there were better ways to solve the problem, and it was a problem that you had about 10 million to 15 million tops of people that didn't have health insurance. Instead of addressing the problem, they tried and they succeeded in screwing up the health insurance industry. And ultimately, Obamacare, or the Affordable Care Act, should and will be repealed because the majority of the American people hate it, including the doctors. And now you want these same busybodies, these people that believe that the solution to every problem is a government program, a government agency, another law, are now going to screw up the internet, get their mitts off of it. So we'll wait to see what the Federal Communications Commission does. But if they do what I hope, if they do regulate the internet and make it regulated like a common carrier, like the telephone, then it's time to launch an effort through Congress, your House and Senate, to repeal this. I wish they would get rid of the FCC. I don't think we need it anymore. Abolish the FCC. That's what they should do. But instead, we have the FCC looking for work. In other words, looking for things to regulate and tax and screw up. And that's what they'll do. They'll screw it up if you let them get away with it. I'm looking at the time. I'm going to call it a short show because I need to edit it down. But I'm more or less caught up. And I don't think I said this, but I initially came in about half an hour prior to this and was having severe technical difficulties. And I don't know what was causing them. So I was late getting started, so I'm going to have to really cut it short. But I wanted to give you those two updates about what's happening in the immigration area as well as in the Ukraine. And I wanted to alert you that you need to get smart on net neutrality. Now, I've looked at the issue several times, but I really didn't have the time to get as conversant in it and review my notes. But that's why I'm giving you the videos, because it takes a while to sink in what's going on, who the players are, and how does it impact you. Don't be fooled or confused by net neutrality. The way I try to get it across is it's the government trying to take over the web, the internet, and mess it up like they mess up almost everything. With that, I wish you a good weekend, and now America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College.